Greetings, and welcome to the Profound Medical Corp. second quarter 2019 financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. Please note this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to your host, Stephen Kilmer, Investor Relations. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start by pointing out that this conference call will include forward-looking statements regarding Profound and its business, which may include, but are not limited to, expectations regarding the efficacy of Profound's technology in the treatment of prostate cancer, BPH, uterine fibroids, and palliative pain. Often, but not always, forward-looking statements can be identified by use of words such as plans, is expected, expects, scheduled, intends, contemplates, anticipates, believes, proposes, or variations, including negative variations of such words and phrases, or state that certain actions, events, or results may, could, would, might, or will be taken, occur, or be achieved. Such statements are based on the current expectations of management. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed in this conference call may not occur by certain specified dates or at all, and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the company, including risks regarding the medical device industry, economic factors, the equity markets generally, and risks associated with growth and competition. Although Profound has attempted to identify important factors that could cause actual actions, events, or results to differ materially from those described in the forward-looking statements, there may be other factors that cause actions, events, or results to differ from those anticipated, estimated, or intended. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Profound undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether the result of new information, future events, or otherwise, other than as required by law. On the call today, representing the company are Dr. Arun Menawat, Profound's Chief Executive Officer, and Aaron Davidson, the company's Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Corporate Development. With that said, I'll now turn the call over to Aaron.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our second quarter 2019 conference call. On behalf of the management team and everyone at Profound, I would like to thank you for your ongoing interest in our company. And for those of you who are shareholders, we appreciate your continued support. I will turn the call over to Arun in a few moments for an update on our commercial activities. However, before I do, I'd like to provide a brief update on our second quarter 2019 financial results. To streamline things, all the numbers I will discuss have been rounded and are therefore approximate. For the three-month period ended June 30th, 2019, the company recorded revenue of $574,000 with $466,000 from the sale of products and $108,000 from installation and training services. Second quarter 2019 revenue more than doubled from $213,000 in the same quarter in 2018. However, these results are still below our internal expectations. This was due in part to some unfortunate timing, as one Sonalleaf system delivery representing revenue of approximately $650,000 was completed subsequent to the quarter end. Fortunately, we expect to recognize this revenue in the third quarter of 2019. Expenditures for R&D increased $838,000 for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2019, compared to the same period in 2018. The increase was primarily due to higher clinical trial and material costs associated with the analysis of our TACT clinical data and testing for R&D and U.S. regulatory projects, as well as increased R&D personnel and options awarded to employees. General administrative expenses for the second quarter 2019 were lower by $650,000 compared to the 3 months ended June 30th, 2018. Overall, the company recorded a second quarter 2019 net loss of $5.8 million or 5 cents per common share, the same as that reported for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2018. As at June 30th, 2019, Profound had cash of approximately $20.5 million. With that, I'll now turn the call over to Arun.
Thank you, Aaron. Before I review recent corporate developments, I wanted to address our second quarter 2019, which, as Aaron pointed out, were impacted by a timing issue. All the revenues in the quarter were from Tulsa in Europe. We did sell a Sonalleve system in the second quarter, but because the delivery didn't occur until the third quarter, that's when the revenue will be recognized in our financials. While this situation was unfortunate, it hasn't at all tempered our excitement about our business or its prospects for the future. In fact, the second quarter of 2019 was one of Profound's most eventful and transformative quarter to date, and I'm delighted to discuss these developments with you. I'm pleased to report that we are in final preparations for our first release of the Tulsa system that will be compatible with a 1.5T MRI system and expect it to be fully functional in Europe by the end of this year. Worldwide, approximately 65% of the MRI installed base consists of 1.5T MRIs. As such, we believe that this is an important milestone for Profound as it will enable us to more easily utilize the current install base of MRIs. Our strategy is to continue to increase compatibility of our Tulsa system with all major types of and suppliers of MRIs. Consistent with that strategy, we also recently announced the installation of a Tulsa system at Trier in Germany that deploys the latest Philips MR, the Ingenia Elition. That said, and while we continue to expand compatibility, we are finding that as long as we are compatible with at least a reasonable number of MRI devices, physicians and institutions are able to gain access either in their practice or at a nearby imaging center. So we don't need to achieve 100% MRI compatibility to achieve broad coverage across our sales geographies. Since the TACT clinical data was announced in early May at the AUA, we're also pleased to have announced the sale of our first Tulsa Pro system in Japan to Hukuyu Hospital in Sapporo. The purchase was made through Japan's Pharmaceutical and Medical Device Act Expanded Access Program, which allows physicians to import. With permission from the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare, an unapproved medical device directly from the distributor in cases where there is a clinical urgency and there is no alternative in Japan. We anticipate that this device will be functional in Q4. The pipeline in Europe has also increased since the data was announced, and we expect to install a number of additional Tulsa systems in Europe later this year. However, our key focus will continue to be on the number of patients treated versus the number of systems placed. This is because our primary business model will not rely significantly upon capital sales revenues, but rather on recurring revenues through the sale of one-time use disposable kits. Of course, we will place additional systems, but that is really a means to an end. The larger the install base, the more meaningfully recurring revenue will occur in 2020 and beyond. Since the TAC data became public, we have been further presenting it to the urology community in the United States and are quite pleased with their initial feedback. The efficacy of Tulsa is typically considered to be at par or slightly better than that of treatments available today, but the key benefits are in reduced side effects, which has been the primary unmet need. TACT demonstrated that the Tulsa Pro safety and efficacy effectively ablates prostate tissue with little impact on men's functional ability with a superior risk-benefit profile. At 12 months, 99.1% of patients reported preservation of urinary incontinence. Less than a quarter had moderate erectile dysfunction that can be treated with medications like Viagra or Cialis. And importantly, no patients experienced severe erectile dysfunction. And finally, fecal incontinence was an absolute zero. We have presented the data to urologists and radiologists, ranging from those in teaching hospitals to community doctors. They confirmed the unmet need and have also confirmed that the versatility of TULSA in being able to treat a variety of patients from whole gland therapy to palliative care patients makes TULSA a strong potential alternative for their patients. We believe that many of them have the potential to be early adopters of TULSA. Finally, we announced that the 510K application was submitted to the US FDA, had cleared the agency's acceptance review. Our application is currently undergoing substantive review, and we recently have had an informal conversation with the FDA. We were impressed with the progress the agency has made on our file, and based on our discussion, we believe the FDA decision could occur as early as during the current quarter. Of course, the ultimate timing is not in our control. However, we are cautiously optimistic. Should TULSA Pro be approved, we are confident that we will be able to start generating U.S.-based revenue later this year based on feedback we have received. I will now like to focus the remainder of the call on the TULSA Pro's competitive advantages and our strategy in anticipation of FDA marketing clearance. TULSA Pro offers the only inside-out approach to ablation via thermal ultrasound. TULSA Pro is versatile. It's essentially a three-in-one device with the ability to deliver customized whole gland or partial gland ablation based on patients' needs. It has been used to treat patients with benign or cancerous prostate disease. It has even been used on palliative care patients. TULSA-treated prostates shrink over time as the dead tissue is absorbed by the body, reducing longer-term risks. It's flexible. It can be used for follow-up treatments to remove residual tissue as a secondary procedure following radiation, and does not preclude other types of treatments, including radiation therapy. TULSA Pro is efficient. The ease and speed of the procedure enables higher throughput than any other procedure, and we believe one unit could perform up to four procedures per day. Finally, it has the potential to improve patient outcomes. The technology minimizes damage to nearby anatomy with a reduced risk of fibrotic tissue development. As an incision-free treatment, patient tolerability is excellent, with a recovery period of as little as 2 days compared to the weeks of recovery required following surgical interventions. It is important to note that the FDA has not granted marketing authorization to any device specifically for the prevention or treatment of cancer. And TULSA Pro will be no different. The TULSA Pro system works by ablating tissue and was developed based on the fact that when human tissue, including cancer tissue, is heated to 55 degrees centigrade or higher, the tissue dies virtually instantly. So while TULSA Pro will not carry a cancer label outcome, it will carry an appropriate ablation label. The urologist must determine how TULSA Pro can be used to effectively treat disease of the prostate. As I mentioned earlier, based on the feedback we have received from urologists around the world and the interest our sales and marketing team has reported, we have an optimistic view of adoption rates. Since our recurring revenue business model is highly capital efficient, even a market penetration of only 1%, which includes already diagnosed prostate cancer patients, could result in $40 million in annualized recurring revenue for Profound. To sum up where we stand today with TULSA-PRO, while we have been conducting a limited commercial launch of TULSA-PRO in select CE mark jurisdictions over the past few quarters, in many respects, we will just only be crossing the starting line when we obtain FDA 510K clearance. The feedback from physicians using the system in Europe, key opinion leaders in the United States who have gained firsthand experience with technology as investigators of the tech trial, as well as U.S. urologists to which we have presented the tech data, have been very positive, particularly regarding its ease of use, efficiency, and flexibility based on patients' need, in addition to its excellent patient tolerability and short recovery periods. After receiving the FDA clearance, we are looking forward to commercializing the TULSA technology in the United States. Before I conclude the call, I want to note that while we have indeed made progress with respect to Sonalive, I have focused my comments today on TULSA-PRO because it is our lead program and we're eager to introduce it to the U.S. market. We do intend to provide a more detailed update on our Sonalive program during the next quarterly call. So to summarize, what we are looking forward to in the near term is the FDA completion of its substantive review of TULSA-PRO and granting of pre-market clearance, provide an update on our first 1.5T MR compatible TULSA-PRO system shipment, and provide an update on Sonalive on our next call. This ends our prepared remarks for today. With that, we're happy to take any questions you might have. Operator.
Thank you. At this time, we will conduct a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for our first question. Our first question comes from Jason Mills with Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks, Arun. And Aaron, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, Jason. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So several questions. Hopefully you'll accommodate a couple of them here. First, wanted to ask if you could give us a tenor for a pipeline, the funnel, if you will, of interested urologists or hospitals in the United States ready to either purchase or lease the TULSA-PRO upon FDA clearance. And also, if you could give us a sense for your installed base in Europe and how that's changed over the last year and how you think that installed base will change once you receive the FDA clearance. I understand that it's in Europe, but a lot of times activity in the United States impacts European physician activity as well. And then I had a few more follow-ups after that.
Yeah, I'm happy to, Jason. So we have presented the TAC data to, I would say, over 100 urologists. And the range is number of the teaching hospitals, I would say the top 20 hospitals we've covered. We've covered a number of private practices, and we've also covered a few imaging centers where they have, you know, a number of different variety of MRIs.
Large corporate.
Large corporate imaging centers. So these are, you know, companies that own these imaging centers, and they have, you know, they basically service the local medical community as a imaging as a service. So these are the three big areas that we sort of focused on. I think that in terms of the feedback, as I mentioned in the prepared remarks, I think the clinical data has been very well received. And then we've talked about the value proposition with respect to the ease of use and the speed with which patients can be treated and the feedback. So I think that those responses is what's driving the enthusiasm on our part. With respect to a sort of an estimate of how many we can deliver and so on, I think our business model is likely to focus more, as I said, on the recurring revenue. The hospitals particularly have not budgeted the capital for these up front, so going after the capital budgets right away is going to be challenging. I think a year down the road, once we have an install base, we certainly plan to charge for our equipment, but we will more than likely go with a leasing rental type agreements in the early stage of this. And I do think that we are, you know, I think the pipeline is certainly in, you know, decent. I don't know if I want to give a number at this point, but I think once the once we, you know, do get clearance, I think we will certainly provide more clarity on that particular particular one. With respect to Europe, I certainly can provide a little bit more clarity. I think that we the key thing that we used to we have been calling it as a limited launch is because the TAC data was not public until in this quarter, and since that time, as I mentioned in the remarks, the community in Europe and Asia has become more interested, and I know there are at least four systems that are going in that we already know, right? So that will you know, there are only about so that many systems that have been really using the system on a routine basis outside of research. So I think that, you know, the number by next year, the installation will take a couple of months and so on, and it'll take them a couple of months to get up to speed. But I think certainly by next year, the European install base should also start producing, you know, increased revenues.
Okay. That's helpful, Arun. Thanks. I'm going to push you a little bit on the U.S. market and the U.S. funnel. And then I also wanted to get you to tick through some of the trial timelines relative to some of the timelines you highlighted at your investor day not very long ago. So in the United States, the reason I wanted to push you on it is you've got TAC data, which you've highlighted at our conference last week and at other places. You're quite positive about it. Our due diligence would suggest that it is favorable data for Profound indeed. So you've had the experience of running a larger company, but a company that started at sort of the level at which you find Profound. And obviously, you're talking about Novadaq. And in the early days, you had a sense for you have a sense for how that sort of played out in the early days and in terms of install base and how you drove it. So with that, is that a good guide for you? And could you give us just a little bit more color quantitatively of what investors should consider to be a ramp of in the install base in the United States that would be favorable? And then also, again, if you could tick through some of those, all of those clinical studies you had, some on the BPH side, some on the prostate side with respect to reimbursement, all of which seem to serve a really important purpose, respectively. Maybe you could give us an update on your thinking for each of those clinical studies. Sorry about the long question.
Jason, they're all very fair questions. And I think you're right. It's a good way to kind of provide more color without necessarily providing explicit numbers. I think that there are a number of differences, and I think the initial feedback is certainly compared to the last company is at least as good, if not better, for sure. And I think that there is a one of the sense that we have is that there is an increased interest in a very highly well-controlled, precise, predictable product like this one, because I think the urology community is looking for an ablation as a solution. So if I compare to my last startup, I think definitely we're in better or the same ballpark. I think the other difference is that this model is really, really capital efficient. So the fact that we can get, you know, $4,000 per patient, you know, we've only brought in, for example, one salesperson, and yes, from my previous company, and you know, we've
pre-launch,
yeah, and we've made the phone calls, and every meeting has been a, you know, substantive meeting, and it speaks to the fact that each site, if they could do 50 to 100 cases, the revenue per site is going to be substantially better compared to the last company, and it's a very proprietary product. So I think from that perspective, I would say we're ahead of the curve on this. The second question you asked, and I'll ask Aaron to also chime in also on this as you see fit, Aaron. I'll just quickly go over the clinical trial. So we did present a very preliminary version of the clinical trials that we will begin in Q1 or first half of next year. We have, since that time, been working on detailing out the clinical trials, and we have developed a pretty comprehensive plan, we think a very thoughtful plan, where we will initiate, I can share with you two things. One is we do plan to initiate a BPH study, and second, we will in fact extend the TACT study to some extent to be able to enable us to increase the number of U.S. patients, which will then allow us to use these studies for U.S. reimbursement. So certainly it has evolved, and I think you will see additional clinical trials initiated within the next 4 to 5 months. Aaron, do you have anything?
Yeah, I just, Jason, I'd add a few numbers to give you some concept. So at Novadaq, we were looking for, on a disposable level, to capture in the range of $800 a procedure. At Profound, we looked to capture somewhere in the range of $4,000 disposables per procedure. So if at Novadaq, let's say our goal was to have 50 devices, doing relatively high volumes by 2 years post-launch, as an example, doing $800 a disposable, you can do the math. Here, let's say we have the same goal of 50 devices doing between 50 and 100 procedures, but at $4,000 per case. You can see there's a pretty big multiplier effect over Novadaq, and it's sort of a richness that we're really appreciating. The physician community and the corporate entities around it here really believe there's a strong patient self-pay market here, because there's a much larger pain for the patient. And so the opportunity to organically grow off our current pipeline is very good. And I don't think, Arun, tell me if I'm, I think, you know, a number like 50 in a pipeline to be implemented over the next 2 years, that's not a crazy number.
No, no, absolutely. I think
very helpful color on both fronts, guys. Thank you very much.
You know,
I'll get back.
The reality is,
yeah.
Could it be 2x that? Yes. Could it be some factors less than that? Yes. But that's probably not a bad, you know, way to think about things on a theoretical level.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you both.
Yeah. No, I think the bottom line.
And that's, sorry, Edwin, one other piece I forgot to mention. That doesn't include rentals or leases or capital sales. That's just the disposable piece of this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Jason's way of asking is actually right on. And that if we, you know, it's hard to predict, and which is why I'm hesitating to provide a specific number.
Right.
But I think comparing to our last startup, the feedback from the urology community is very strong.
Yeah. We're very optimistic.
We're optimistic on that basis, yeah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rahul Sarugaser with Raymond James. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, Arun and Aaron. Thank you for taking my question. So congratulations on such a productive quarter. So just a couple quick questions for me. So to clarify, the new 1.5 Tesla device that goes into 1.5 Tesla MRI, I'm assuming that there are no additional equivalency studies that need to be undertaken and submitted to the FDA?
So the way we filed with the FDA, it was structured in a way that any additional, as we add other MRIs, as long as we show equivalency, it is most likely a note to file. So it is not likely to be a significant, issue from a regulatory perspective.
Great. And then moving forward to adoption, which I'm sure is the burning question on most investors' minds now that you guys are shifting from a development company into a commercial company, hopefully very soon. With the emergence in the utility of this device in BPH, what are you seeing as sort of the split between prostate cancer adoption and BPH adoption, and how is that sort of trending over time?
Yeah. So at the moment, what we see in Europe, that almost 40% of the cases are BPH cases being done. And that is being done with really no guidance and very limited data.
They have their own data,
their own
experience, which frankly is teaching us.
Is teaching us. And what we did in spring was we kind of looked at all of the data and we helped develop the actual more optimized protocol for what, you know, the transition zone to be ablated. And we think that it is it's a way for them to, you know, customize the treatment. And so I think that our goal is to really focus it with, you know, ablation where they would otherwise use other surgical means. So this is focused on the extreme cases where the prostates are very large. But one of the things that we are finding is resonating is the fact that our clinical tech trial data shows that the prostates shrink down to 10% or less. And so, you know, again, I'm an older man, and I think about this, and if you say to me, hey, this is a treatment that will shrink the prostate back to its normal size, and particularly the prostate that's the part that you don't really need, I find that to be a very interesting value proposition. I find that to be, that sort of, it implies durability. So I do think that, you know, ablation of both cancerous and benign tissue will be adopted.
And I just add, Rahul, that our experience as company-sponsored trials is in cancer. We will promote on-label only and promote for our label is ablation of prostate tissue for prostate diseases. And, you know, this is a tool in surgeons' hands that they'll choose to use, hopefully conservatively and appropriately, on-label.
Yeah.
Great. Great. Thank you. That's very helpful. And one last question, sort of coming back to the, you know, the numbers that you were using with Jason, where you're talking about 50, you know, approximately an install base of approximately 50 devices, each one doing around, you know, 50 procedures.
Well, I just want to be really careful there. I wasn't trying to give guidance, or I was trying to give an example.
Right. I'm just using that hypothetical example. So the two levers that are going to drive the revenue over the next few years are going to be the installed base and the number of procedures being driven at each location. And so, you know, right now, what are you sort of seeing as the number of procedures being run at the current installed base, and what would be a reasonable escalation, you know, over the first year? Because I think that the 2020 is going to be very instructive for a lot of investors.
Yes. So, Rahul, I think that if we look at our European experience, what we found was that, and we hear that from the Americans too, is that they will initially start slow because they will want to, you know, get their own experience under their belt. So I think anticipating in the range of 30-ish at a site is
30 completed, but the run rate they'll finish the year at would be?
The run rate would be probably twice as much.
50 to 60 perhaps?
At the
end of 12 months?
Yeah.
And at the end of 24?
And then I think if you look at the history, you know, 100 per year is, you know, sites easily can get there. So I think starting with 30-ish, ending the year with 50, 60-ish, and the following year in the 100 range is sort of the ramp that is our best guess at the moment.
Of course, it's going to be a blend, right?
Yeah.
Of academic centers who are doing less, of commercial centers that are doing
more. Do more.
And we have some influence over that. It's in our best interest to have 100 centers doing 100 procedures, as an example, versus having 500 centers doing 10 cases each, in some regards. Part of this, too, though, there is a capital sale model here where we'll be charging rent or lease on our initial sites and give them, like, a year at that, and then, not necessarily extend that further and say, you by a year you need to have in your capital cycle to buy the equipment or a new lease at a different rate. It won't only be disposable sales. There will be rental, lease, or capital sales as a component that in the early years could be as much as our disposable sales.
Interesting. Great. Thank you very much. That's really helpful. I'll leave here.
Thank you so much, Raul.
Once again, to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Brian Gagnon with Gagnon Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, gentlemen. A few questions for you.
Good afternoon.
So, Arun, you've been quietly finishing this 1.5 Tesla project over the last 6 months. How much does this expand the market by? It kind of seems like it expands it by threefold.
Yeah. I mean, worldwide, it's the largest install base, and it's something that we wanted to accomplish about the same time when we would be submitting for the FDA. So, I agree with you. It's a little bit older technology, so there are a couple of things. One is that when we look at the install base, it's not only the larger install base, but it's also the install base that has more available time. So I think from that perspective, it's an important very important development for us.
Okay. So when you actually launch in the U.S., assuming you get approval, will the Tulsa Pro that you're selling be capable of doing the 1.5T and 3T?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and the existing ones that are out there in the market today, aren't that many, are those software upgrades or hardware?
It's a little bit of picking, a little bit, but not a significant change. There is likely to be one particular hardware change, but not a very big expensive change.
Okay. On the FDA, and congrats on what seems like good progress, what has changed to give you more confidence that this could move up in timetable?
Probably best we not discuss it.
So I mean, I think that we are, you know, we analyze everything in its detail, and we're really coming from a comparative perspective that, you know, it's sort of public information on the FDA site that sort of says, okay, how long does it take to go from step one to step two? And, you know, our file, we were expecting, because of the size of the file, which they made it very clear to us, very big file, clearly, which is why we originally thought it would be a six-month process. But they moved at about, you know, right in the early stage, they moved quite rapidly. So we had done we've completed the, what we consider to be the interactive review. And I think that the fact that we've moved along the various steps at a pace that is, you know, far more rapid than we originally expected is really what's giving us the confidence.
Okay. All right. Hopefully we'll see something soon. On Europe, you said you've been in a soft launch for a while. Do you decide to go to a full launch when you get FDA approval, or will you let Europe slide behind the U.S. in importance?
So our goal is going to be the U.S. And the reason is, you know, with the resources we have, and we think that the patient pay market in U.S. is well developed, and we think that's where we will invest our sales dollars. And, you know, we are seeing, as I mentioned before, increased interest in Europe, and we will, you know, as we do see it, we'll certainly cater to it. But our primary goal is to really focus on U.S.
The U.S. opportunity makes the European opportunity dwarfed in size.
Yeah. Understood. Last question for me. The private pay clinics, or the private clinics in the U.S., there are several of them that are very large and that do, you know, at least hundreds, if not thousands, of urology procedures a year. Do you think that those could be a first target for you, which would, one, drive adoption, and two, give you additional clinical data? And then I lied. I have one more question. You talked about the TACT study, and this seems like a change where you would increase the size of the initial TACT study to be the pivotal study to give you reimbursement. So would that TACT study change to a level one trial?
Sure. Brian, let me answer the second question first very quickly. It's a very straightforward.
Okay.
So we need 5 published studies, and there is a requirement of a certain percentage of patients that have to be American patients. And by increasing the TACT study by a small amount, we can accomplish one of those goals. It will not become a level one study, but the BPH trial that we do will be a level one study. So it's going to be the combination of the two, and we will stay loyal to ablation as our target, both for FDA and for reimbursement. And so that is how we will bridge those that gap. So we think it's a very thoughtful way of achieving, you know, multiple objectives. With respect to your first question, it speaks to our market entry strategy, actually. So we do think that, for example, those investigators who were tagged users, as well as a few of the big name hospitals that are opinion leading hospitals that were not part of TACT, we do think that many of them are likely to adopt, but at the same time, we don't think they're going to be the high volume users. And so, as we have talked before, our strategy is to be sure that the opinion leaders are using the technology, whereas the volumes might not be very high. And our strategy is to continue to drive clinical publications so that we are not only driving towards reimbursement, but also towards making sure that our technology is always in publications and podium presentations to drive the share of mind. And at the same time, as you said, we have talked with a number of private clinics who have expressed interest, and we do think, as you said, that those private clinics is where the volume is going to come from. So in that sense, it is a bit of a three-prong strategy for us.
Terrific. Thanks very much, guys. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Our next question comes from Ben Hainer with Alliance Global Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the questions.
Good afternoon, Ben.
First off, for me, sorry I've been jumping in between a few calls here, but this kind of dovetails on Brian's question with regard to the initial adopters. We've been chatting with a handful of people who, you know, are doing things like MRI-guided second opinion biopsies of the prostate that would seemingly be good fits for initial systems for you guys. You know, it seems like they're already aware of TULSA-PRO, acutely aware, and appear to be eager to get their hands on one. It does sound like you've had conversations with these types of accounts. Could you provide any more color on what you're seeing in the interest level, inbound interest, things of that nature?
Yes, Ben, I think that, you know, as we were looking at the market introduction strategies, one of the questions, number of investors and analysts, yourself and us, we had was, you know, how is this integration of an intervention with MRI is going to play out? And I think that one of the things that we have been quite pleased to hear is exactly that point, that a number of these clinics, a number of these imaging centers are in fact doing in-bore prostate biopsies because the results from those biopsies seem to be quite superior. And as it turns out, it is not a reimbursed procedure, so the patient is willing to pay for this, and they are already in tune with the whole model is already in place. And so some of these sites have sort of said, we're already to the point where, you know, we're using MRI as part of the diagnosis process. We're using MRI as part of the biopsy process. And for now, us to move to the next step where we're using the MRI for treatment is a very logical next step. This is partly what's driving a bit of our enthusiasm, that this has not been as big a hurdle in terms of the paradigm shift that a real-time MR is needed for this therapy. So I think that is certainly interesting. And as I mentioned before, the other thing we're finding interesting is that a number of these imaging centers where they're owned by, you know, private equity firms, these imaging centers kind of understand the proposition very well. And so having the imaging center where the MR tech is already there, the radiologist is already there, I think they already have relationships with the urologists, I think that channel could be very interesting.
That's a very good point about the private equity guys. And you know, just I guess as an aside, I was surprised to hear what the pricing, the out-of-pocket private pay figures these guys were getting to some of these procedures. So that's just, I guess, a comment more than anything. I guess I'll leave it at that and take the rest of my questions offline. Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Thank you so much, Graham.
At this time, there are no further questions in queue, so I would like to turn the call back over to Dr. Menawat for closing comments.
Thank you so much for the Q&A sessions, and look forward to updating you at the Q3 call. Thank you.